My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
All right, let's try this. I hope this is working. I'm Kyle. That's James. We're trying something a little different today.
Something new, something different.
This is very... This is strange to me. So if you're watching on the stream, it's going to look a little bit different because I am now in the big studio. I'm sitting where James used to sit. James now sits where Kenny typically sits. And we have vacated Studio One where I used to sit, a.k.a. the official clubhouse of the Colby Jones fan club. So we have moved that here. James, welcome to the clubhouse.
I don't know if I can accept the Colby Jones clubhouse here.
Why?
Be here. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not in the clubhouse yet. I'm not there, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay. I know why. There we go. We should be better now. I think that's good now. Yeah? I hope so. It says we're not in the... It says the studio's not on, but we're in air?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I think that's good. We're figuring things out.
We are figuring things out. What's going on, everybody?
This is fine. I picked a bad day to do this. I should have just gone in the old studio. I messed this up. I'm sorry, everybody. We're hopefully getting this figured out ASAP where James and I can hear each other because right now I can't hear anything. But hopefully everybody can hear us. Apparently there's an echo and we're getting that worked out right now. Anyways, how's it going, man? I like this. I prefer this.
Yeah,
once we get everything squared away, I like this so much better than... Because even though I'm just in that room, what do you think? 10 feet away from you, maybe?
Yeah, it's like 12 to 15 feet. Yeah.
The glass makes it feel weird.
Well, yeah, I'm like in like a sound chamber, like by myself. Like, you, James, you go in the padded room by yourself, and you just hang out by yourself.
You didn't even push buttons.
No, I don't push buttons. I'm there by myself. I can't touch anything. It's like, keep your hands to yourself, James. Like, don't touch any buttons. Just sit there and, you know, that's it. That's it.
But now we're here together.
Now we're here.
And I like this so much more.
No, this is going to be awesome. Once we get it all up and going, sorry if we're having sound issues. We'll figure it all out. The incredible Jonathan is here working with us. There he is. He's waving, and then you'll see him in Kyle's screen here in just a sec. But we'll figure it all out.
So while we're doing this, while we're getting this sorted out, we'll wait for your thoughts. You were at Kings practice yesterday. Everybody on the stream, say hello to Jonathan.
Echo is gone, Jonathan. That's good.
Okay. Shout out. I also had to mute your microphone.
Oh.
Which maybe that was a me problem. I don't know. Okay. But before we get into, because James, you went out to Kings practice yesterday.
I did.
So once we get this all squared away and we're all figured out, we'll dive into that. I learned yesterday that I'm going to Fans Fest. That is the A's Fan Fest that is being put on by fans because the team is not doing one. Because God forbid.
God forbid you cater to the fans that you might have to play in front of for 4 years.
Right.
4 years.
Yeah. God forbid.
I mean, your fans could have a college degree by the time you get this thing done. What is going on?
They're doing everything wrong, per usual. But
yes.
The 68s, which is a support group, a fan group in Oakland, and then there is the Last Dive Bar, another kind of fan group in Oakland. They've put together what's called Fans Fest.
Yep.
And it is going to be in downtown Oakland at Block 15, and then out in Jack London Square. There's an indoor venue and an outdoor venue. They've got a bunch of old players coming through. I think Coco Crisp is going to be there.
Nice.
I think Ben Grieve is going to be in the building, I heard.
What?
And I think he's the 98
the big
AL
lefty?
Rookie of the Year. Yeah, yeah. I believe. I think he led the league in double plays.
He probably did. He was very slow, but he had a very, very
really good player.
Left-handed swing.
Really good player. At least in his rookie year.
Yeah.
And so it's just going to be this big event. And my buddy who's part of the 68s hits me up because I'd hit him up a while back and I was like, hey man, do I need tickets to this thing? And he's like, nah, just pull up. And then he hits me yesterday and he goes, hey, do you want a credential? I'm like, yeah, credential me, bro. I'm there.
Is it today?
No. It's Saturday.
Okay. Saturday.
So I'm pulling up. I'm going to try and get some sound for this radio show.
Okay.
I'm going to try and talk to the fans. And so, James, I'm telling you all this because I'm going to try and do some Big J journalism, I think.
Okay.
I'm going to go in there. And I just have to figure out exactly what the angle is. Because, like, hey, Oakland fans are mad at John Fisher isn't like, new or exciting. Like, am I trying to, like, get the players on the record, the former players on the record, and saying, like, hey, what did you think about playing in Oakland? Is this a baseball town? Is that the vibe? I'm trying to break some news at Fans Fest.
I think if I were going to Fan Fest with you, Fans Fest with
Fans
you,
Fest.
Fans
right.
Fest
mm-hmm.
with you. I would ask the question about Sacramento. Because
ooh,
I think that's a big thing. Like,
okay.
Like, look, if the folks out there, you know that there's a good chance you're gonna lose your team. But would you rather have them relocate to Sacramento? And play it at Sutter Health Field, at least for the next 3 years, or would you rather have them leave completely and go away? And what would be your thoughts on if they did permanently end up in Sacramento and you had to commute the 70 miles from Oakland to Sacramento to actually watch a game? Like, would that be okay with you, or are you just so hell-bent on this is such a mess that you can't do this?
Yeah, that's so for me personally on that, just since you're asking, you're the journalist here, so I'm going to answer your question. For me, it's John Fisher specifically that I will not support.
Okay.
Like, that's the problem. If the A's came to Sacramento, even permanently.
Yep.
Specifically, if they're here for that period of time, the 2024 through 2027, or whatever they are, 25 through 27, the 3 year period where they don't have a home currently.
Yes.
A Major League Baseball team doesn't know where they're playing games next season. It's nuts. Spring training started.
I mean,
they don't know where they're
crazy.
Playing. It's ridiculous.
I mean, but it's like if you're playing in like a church league basketball league and you get kicked out of the gym you're playing in. And you got nowhere to play, and you got to find a new gym to play in.
Right.
Except for you're a multi-million dollar. your business is worth like $2 billion.
Right.
And you're just like vagabond homeless, like franchise.
It's outrageous.
Embarrassing.
It's outrageous. And it feels like the A's are the only, because can you imagine, like, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, and I try to do like a cross sport comparison. Can you just imagine if like the Atlanta Hawks We're just like right now going, hey, by the way, don't know where the Hawks are playing next year. That's crazy. That's nuts.
I mean, we went through it here in
Sacramento.
That would
never happen.
Well, we did. The Maloofs tried to go through this. Like, they were trying to just pick up the team and move to the Honda Center. And
oh, that's right.
Sell
out
to
Anaheim.
Samueli in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing was like, well, that arena's it's not even as good as Arco. Like, why would someone allow you to go there
right.
when you don't have an arena plan there either and no one in LA wants you?
Right.
Like, no, nobody there. I mean, it's not like Vegas. There are baseball fans in Vegas. Like,
sure.
This whole thing that there are no fans in Vegas is hooey. There are. I know baseball fans in Vegas. But
there's not two teams there already, too.
Yeah.
Which is part of the whole asinine thing with the Kings trying to go to Anaheim.
No. That's exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, if I were there at FanFest, I would ask, like, what is it if the resolution isn't Oakland? If this is not where you're going, then where is it? Where are you comfortable with them going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to lose a team, are you okay if it's somewhere local? And I think the other question I would probably ask is, like, look, if it's got to, will you support them at all at the mm-hmm. Coliseum? Will you show up for the next mm-hmm. 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
And if you really want to get down to it, will you boycott NBC Sports Bay Area for putting this out there?
Sure.
For you know, like, paying these people
mm-hmm.
and supporting them when
sure.
they probably shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, if I'm NBC Sports Bay Area, I'm already considering, like, taking them to court and violating their agreement. Because what they've done here is, it's a bad look for everybody. It's mm-hmm. it's a bad look for the television station to have to put those guys on, to have to put money into it, to mm-hmm. pay them $70 million when they aren't doing anything on the field. Like, it's an embarrassment to everybody. So I guess that's where I would go too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Major League Baseball says, yeah, we'll guarantee an expansion team there if they draw X amount of fans over the next 3 years, then I'd be in there every day.
Yeah.
Not every day. I'm not going to 81 home games. That's nuts.
No.
But I would be in there 20 plus times.
Yeah.
Pretty comfortably 20 times, I think.
I would go. I probably wouldn't make it 20. I'd probably make it 10.
You are much further than I am from.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, getting there and getting back mm-hmm. is not fun. But, like, look, I still love to go down. I have a buddy who lives in Walnut Creek that we went mm-hmm. to high school and junior high together. He's got two boys. I've got two boys. We'll meet up and we'll go to games
mm.
and sort of, you know, reconnect and hang out. I would love to go to more games.
Yeah.
But the fact is, I don't want to support them just like anyone else does. You know,
yeah.
And nobody should want to support what's happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And but so that's a problem.
But at the same time, like, this is where I really struggle with this. And this is why I've been fortunate enough to not have to pay for tickets the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Where I can easier justify it to myself going to a game. But the flip side of that is, I don't want to support John Fisher and this ownership group at all.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like, I love the Coliseum. You can call it a dump. You can call it whatever you want. Like, I love watching baseball there.
I do too.
And it's a place I've been going. Like, my dad grew up going to games there.
Yeah.
I grew up going to games there with my dad. Like, that's a special place for me.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I had season tickets together, and we went to all these games together when our relationship was really blossoming. And it's a special place in my heart. And I love the players and I love the team, but I can't. I don't, especially if we know, like, hey, for sure 2024 is it, they're off to Utah or wherever in the next couple of years. I think they're probably going to wind up staying in Oakland.
Yeah.
For the next,
it's probably gonna
couple seasons. But
even with Casey Pratt, I've had this discussion.
Yeah.
Like, I think the idea that, you know, that because the Kings almost relocated,
mm-hmm.
you know, it would be bad form
yeah.
for the A's to support this
yeah.
for Sacramento and
yeah.
Vivek Ranadive.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tough time with it because I just don't think it's the same thing. Like, if you're helping him get out of town, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you're opening a door for Sacramento,
sure,
to down the road to be a major league city,
mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's definitely like a business aspect to this that Vivek Ranadive is not taking my emotions as a fan into account if he thinks that he might be able to own a baseball team in this city one day.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I totally get it. I have another baseball thing I want to get to, but we can kick that can as far as we want to kick it because okay. We've got Kings stuff. The Kings were back at practice yesterday. Our Kings insider, James Hamm, was in the building. Subscribe to the Kings Beat at thekingsbeat.com and the Kings Beat podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We have some notes from practice, and we'll look ahead to the Kings second half. They face the Spurs tomorrow. But what did we learn from Kings practice yesterday, and what are we looking for from the Kings moving forward in the 2024 season? We'll talk about that next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Right, we're winging it. For some reason, I can't hear my own rejoin, but that's fine. Can you hear the rejoin?
I cannot hear the rejoin.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Hey, we're working things out. Oh, that's why.
Everything is awesome.
No, it's because, hey, I didn't have the hockey on.
All right. What's going on, Kyle?
Oh, you know, working things out one thing at a time. The Kings are working some things out right now. They are back in practice after the All-Star weekend, the All-Star break. I feel like All-Star break is a specifically baseball thing.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's almost like the All-Star week. Like,
yeah.
It's a substantial break. It used to be only like the three-day weekend.
Right.
And then they were able to expand it because, you know, the Stars are coming back mm-hmm. exhausted after the All-Star break. And I don't know, we still call it the break. I don't know.
Well, the Kings are back from it, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. It was good to be in the gym. Hear the squeak of sneakers and mm-hmm. and the thump thump of the ball bouncing off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. And you know, for the most part, the Kings are healthy coming out of the mm-hmm. coming out of the break. Sasha Vezenkov is going to be out. I don't know if Sasha will play again this season or not. I have no idea. Like, in all honesty, it's a grade 3 ankle sprain, 4 to 6 weeks. But I'm going to guess it's going to be longer than that.
Yeah, because that's 4 to 6 weeks just to.
Before they
back.
Reevaluate. I mean,
then, right. Yeah. Then you need to get back into playing shape. Yeah, that's...
Well, yeah, but that's just to get reevaluated. And most players, right. It's more like 8 to 12 weeks. So, yeah, that's a catastrophic ankle injury. So.
Yeah, that's bad.
So outside of that, like, I don't know. Like, the vibe was good in the building. We talked to Keegan Murray. We talked to De'Aaron Fox. We talked to Mike Brown. Everyone seems to be in good spirits. Keegan had a good time at All-Star Weekend.
Good.
And he knows that, you know... like getting to be at All-Star Weekend is a privilege as a young player
mm-hmm.
because you might not make it back.
Yeah.
Right. So just because you're there for Rising Stars doesn't mean that you will become a star.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's always kind of an interesting aspect. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway is that when you're in a grind of a season, you have a bunch of physical ailments that start stacking up, which mm-hmm. both of them do, like Foley. De'Aaron Fox talked about his shoulder issue. And just like the struggles that he's had. He said he hadn't had an MRI, but wasn't really sure what it is that his shoulder, what was in there, what the problem was. He was asked specifically if it was a labrum, and he said, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know the word labrum, but I don't know what it is. And he probably knows that because Rashawn Holmes tore his labrum and missed like most of the second half of mm-hmm. the season. Anyway, I think that the biggest focus for me is not just the physical ailments that these guys start to build up on, but the mental aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a grind. And I know Keegan talked about his mom met him out there in Indiana
mm-hmm.
and he got to hang out with his mom for a few days. He got to kind of do
that's great
basketball, non-basketball things, mm-hmm. Get back to basics. I know Fox probably spent the entire week with his family mm-hmm. and just relaxing and getting away from the game. And I think that that's what this team really needs. They need to come back with a new mindset and like really a new focus
mm-hmm.
and hit the ground running with against a bad team with a crazy, you know, superstar and Wembanyama that's coming up. But you need to get off on the right track and
yeah.
and stay focused. And I think it was also interesting. Fox was really clear. Like, yeah, I don't know. After we play San Antonio, I know that. He's like, and I think we play the Clippers one of these days. He's like, but I don't really know the schedule. That's not how I work. And I thought it was kind of interesting to see that he's so hyper-focused on the game at hand. And,
yeah.
And that's something that Mike Brown preaches.
Yeah. I mean, you'd kind of hope so, because overlooking teams is how the Kings have kind of gotten where they are, it feels like.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a little bit of a parallel with, I know the season's over, but with the 49ers, because they had their three losses in a row against Cleveland, Minnesota, and Cincinnati in weeks 6 through 8. Mm-hmm. And when you'd watch, it was like, man, this is just not it. Like, this team just needs some time off.
Yeah.
This team needs a week off.
They need to mentally reset.
And it feels like we've been saying that about the Kings. And with the 49ers, it's a little different, because they had, you know, they start 5-0, then they lose their 3 in a row. But with the Kings, it's felt for the last month or so, it's like, man, somebody needs a day off.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we been like, maybe De'Aaron gets a night off tonight. Maybe Malik Monk gets a night off tonight.
Yeah.
And now they've collectively gotten that week off. And with San Francisco, just to go back to that, they come out of their bye week. They go to Jacksonville. They win 34-3 against a team at that point that was a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
And they got rolling after that, and they looked more like themselves. That's sort of my expectation with Sacramento.
Yeah.
Especially given how they closed the last couple of games before the break, where they lose in Phoenix, but they look more like themselves. And they just have a really gritty, kind of ugly win in Denver on the second night of that back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they had a little momentum going in that they can carry over.
Yeah, I think that's big, right? Mm-hmm. I think the way that they played in Denver, the way that they battled, even the way they played in Phoenix, you know, to hang with the Phoenix team despite the fact that you can't hit a three ball.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Denver. You hung with the NBA champs despite the fact that you couldn't hit a shot from the mm-hmm. perimeter. You really like had no legs at all, but you sat there and fought. So I was pleasantly surprised with how they played through the last couple of games. And I think there is a certain amount of momentum that carries over. But I would also caution, like, the San Antonio Spurs, again, they're not very good, but you could get bit by them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you play the Clippers at LA, and then you have the Miami Heat on the second night of a back-to-back on Monday mm-hmm. at Golden One. And then you play Denver, and then you play the Timberwolves. And then the schedule lightens a little bit with the Bulls and the Lakers and the Spurs and the Rockets. But you can't take anything for granted if you're the Kings. You mm-hmm. set yourself up in a really bad position.
Mm-hmm.
And last year they were so good after the All-Star break, right? Mm-hmm. And they just, like, holy cow, I can't believe this team is finding success like this. What were they, 19-6 after the break? In the last three games of the season, they kind of were throwaway games that they didn't really focus
mm-hmm.
because they're getting ready for the playoffs. So for me, I want to see who this team is coming out, because yeah. we've had like a major identity crisis the entire season. And some of the focus is that they're coming out. It's always fun when you have players repeat what their coaches come out and say. And they definitely understand that they have a problem defending the three-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make some schematic changes, but also they need different effort
mm-hmm.
from that.
Yeah.
And Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox both talked about this. If they were league average at defending the three, right now they're the worst in the NBA, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
They're giving up like 39.7% from three. If they were
That's just a bonkers number for a season.
Crazy. Like, they could go down as the worst 3-point defending team of all time.
I was gonna look at last year, not to
yeah.
cut you off, but last year the Spurs allowed teams hit 39.1%, but then second was the Blazers at 37.9%.
Yeah.
And like you said, the Kings are up near 40% this year.
Yeah. So they believe that, like, look, if they can clean that up,
39.7.
They both said, Fox and Brown both said very specifically, like, look, if we were just league average, we would be like number 8 in the league in defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they have. Their mindset is like, look, let's just get to league average at defending the three and we'll be okay. And to me, that's okay. That if that's a starting point, fine.
Sure.
Right. And then on the offensive end, they're looking to play with pace. They're looking to get to the free throw line more. They're looking for more paint touches. And basically what they're saying is by pushing the tempo, getting up and down the floor, getting into the paint quicker, they think that number one, they'll draw more fouls. Number two, they'll get to the basket more and get more easy buckets. But also number three, they'll be able to get into their offensive sets quicker and have sort of that inside out feel where you're breaking the defense down, you're kicking the ball out and moving it around. And then it comes down to free throw shooting, which again, just like the 3-point shooting, this team is the worst free throw shooting in the NBA, shooting 37.3%. I mean, 73.7%. And that's bad. 73.7% from the free throw line. If they can improve, and the crazy thing is, I'll point this out for fans. The two things that they're doing, like, feel fixable, right? So, like, when we're watching a team come out and they hit, like, 12 threes in the first, like, I don't know, 16 minutes of a game, you're always like, okay, well, they're not going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do against the Kings, but
I've stopped thinking that they're going to not do it.
Yeah.
The whole night.
No, I get that.
When a team goes 8 of 12 in the first quarter, I'm like, they're hitting 33s tonight.
Yeah, exactly. you're instantly thinking that. But I think that, like, these are things that are, like, sustainable, non-sustainable.
Sure.
Like, if we talked about, if the Kings were shooting 44% from three on the season, you're like, okay, well, that can't hold up. But these things that they're doing wrong feel like they are fixable. And I think that that might be a good thing for this team, where you're walking in the second half and saying, if we make adjustment here, adjustment here, adjustment here, we might be able to get on the same track, on the right track really quickly and just move forward.
Yeah. I have some thoughts on that, but we need to hit a break. So we'll continue talking Kings next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Tom, this is a good question. Typically not great, but, you know, like...
Oh, here we go.
No.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're back.
That's how that's supposed to go.
That's right.
Well, we're figuring things out one segment at a time. It actually only took me two segments. I've got it all squared away now.
All right.
I'm pretty fired up about it.
All right.
If you're just tapping in, James and I are doing something a little bit different today. Or not different. It is different, but it's also new. This is how the show is going to operate from now on. We're in the same studio.
Yep.
If you give a dang, or I'm running the board from in here now instead of in the separate room that I used to be in. That's the short of it.
It's awesome.
It's great. I'm legitimately, like, this is such an easier way to communicate than through glass.
Well, that and just like the handoff, like when we switch over from D'Lo and Casey D'Lo and Casey at noon, there's so many things I have to do over there to like put everything back so Damian can do his shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so while you're in there like handing off to Jesse, I'm in here like I'm like replacing the like foam off of the microphones.
Sure.
I have to move the camera that's in front of you. I've got to switch the overlay on the stream. Like there's all of these things that we have to do as we're handing it off. And now we don't have to do most of that because now we're looking at each other as opposed to me having to completely move the entire scene so I can look through a window over here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll still have to do some stuff over here, but it's going to be a lot smoother, I think.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed that it sounds okay as well.
Yeah, hopefully people out there, like, we're sounding okay. We have no idea. I mean, we're on the radio. We'll find out after, I guess. But Jonathan's here, and Jonathan is supporting us.
Yeah, we love Jonathan and Seth and our entire engineering team.
Yes.
Appreciate all those guys for all their work to make things happen. You mentioned something about the Kings. I want to talk about their three-point defense for sure because that's something that we've talked about all season. But you mentioned getting downhill and shooting more free throws.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get into the paint. And that's something that I've been begging for from Harrison Barnes because I think he is so effective at that.
Oh, yeah.
Just getting down into the block and drawing fouls. But the Kings are tied for 27th in the league in free throws per field goal attempt.
Yeah, see, that's not going to cut it.
That can't. In the modern NBA, now it should be noted, Denver's 26th. Denver is .001 ahead of them. But you go look at Philly, Phoenix, Minnesota is fourth, Milwaukee's fifth, the Lakers, shocking, sixth. The Clippers are eight. Like all these teams that you see in the playoffs and in the mix are teams that can go down and get a couple of easy points via the free throw line.
They're also, if you look, if I'm not mistaken, most of those are large market teams. Just going to say like...
Orlando's number three, Milwaukee's five.
Okay.
But you're right. The but top 10 is
stars.
Philly, Phoenix, Orlando, Minnesota, Milwaukee, both LA teams, Miami, Atlanta, and New Orleans.
Yeah, I always feel like the NBA, they do like have star calls, like without
yeah,
any question.
For sure.
And until your stars actually make an all-star team 2 years in a row, like they might not get that respect.
Sure.
And so I think it's going to be a problem. But the other thing you got to do is you got to play with force.
So that's just it. It's not a matter of, it's not like the Kings shoot at the rim all the time. Now, the way Sabonis is officiated is nuts. But that's I think the bigger key here.
Yeah.
Is kind of forcing that issue more than they currently do. And that's something that I would like to see. I think you see that number go up. Whether they're, and again, free throws per field goal attempt is not like the end all be all, but you just mentioned that. And it's something that I feel like, man, De'Aaron Fox can get to the free throw line almost whenever he wants.
Yeah.
But he settles for a lot of threes. And again, I think Sabonis does yeoman's work underneath and should probably go to the free throw line eight more times a game than he does. But that's something that I want to see more from Harrison Barnes. I think Malik Monk is capable of doing that. It's something I would like to see more of from Keegan Murray, is attacking the basket and drawing fouls. Like he's a big body, tough to defend, especially when he gets down in the post.
Yep.
I think if you see that number tick up, I think it'll correlate with success offensively for Sacramento.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, like when we were talking to Mike and De'Aaron both, you know, the problem, last year they averaged like 21.5, 25.1 free throw attempts per game, but they also shot 79%. Mm-hmm. This year, they're all the way down to 21.8, so they've lost like 3.3 attempts per game, which is really strange because you have the same exact team. Mm-hmm. Like, it is run it back. Like, right, we're clear. This is the same group of players. De'Aaron Fox should be getting to the free throw line the same amount of times. Domantas Sabonis should be getting to the free throw line. And if anything, they should be getting to the free throw line more, Kyle, because they're not shooting it well. And teams are like, all right, well, fine. I'm not just going to give you a wide open look. I'm going to make you earn it. No, that's not happening. So one of the points that Mike was making is that, like, look, if you can get up to 25 free throw attempts per game, that's another three. Mm-hmm. But then you're hitting almost 80% of those.
Yeah.
Now you're hitting like 2.4 of those three attempts. That's how you instantly increase your offensive rating and you get right back into the scoring punch that everyone else is doing.
And not to mention, how many games have they lost this year just by missing free throws?
It's at least three or four.
It's kind of nuts that we're sitting here and we go, oh, hey, what do they need to do offensively? What do they need to do? It's like, first of all, make your free ones. I know that sounds silly because it's such a, that's just like the dad thing to say, right? It's like, gotta make your free throws. But with this team, it's kind of, you just laid it out. It's like, if they're making 80% of their free throws instead of 73%.
Yeah.
Or whatever insanely low number they're at. For reference real quick, I was mentioning the free throws per field goal attempt, and this just ties in. They're at 0.175 this year, tied with the Nets for 27th. Last year, they were 7th in the NBA in that category at 0.225.
Yeah.
And that's just free throws per field goal attempt.
And part of that is that they're settling for way too many threes.
I agree.
And so that would be the other aspect. So
I'm kind of actually, real quick, I'm kind of torn on that because that's something that when Fox doesn't have a great game, that's a critique I'll see a lot from people is like, oh, he settles for too many. He shot, okay, that's great. He had an okay game, but he shot too many three-pointers. Mm-hmm. And my pushback to that all year has been, well, if he's going to hit 40% of them, I want him shooting 10 a game. If you're going to be a 40% three, but the problem is that number has steadily dropped, and he's still career high in three-point percentage by a lot this year. He's at 37.6%. His previous career high was 37.1. He shot 2.9 a game. That was in his second season.
Yeah.
So this year he's at almost 8 a game, shooting it at 37.6%. And I don't even hate that number and that number of attempts, but it's the amount of times where you see him settle, especially like late in games.
Yeah.
Where you see him settle and all of a sudden he's shooting 12 or 13 threes and he's making four of them. And that's just not where De'Aaron Fox is at his best. He is unguardable when he puts the ball on the deck and he starts getting downhill.
No, I totally agree. And I think it plays into the other problem. Like, when he is getting downhill, he is attacking the rim. That's when he's going to get to the free throw line as well. So he can still score 3 points on a possession. He's just got to do it the old-fashioned way.
Right.
And that's something that he needs to do more of in the second half of the season. But I'd also caution people, like, one of the problems is that De'Aaron Fox gets beat up by going to the rim. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's tough, but he does. He gets, you know, absolutely crushed so many times. We even saw it with against the Suns, you know, with him getting taken out and clothesline going to the rim and just like, okay, like, look, that's not who your star can be.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to err on the side of caution.
Do you think that the fact he's shooting 70.6% from the stripe is affecting the way he's playing?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the chicken or the egg, right?
Sure.
Is he already affected by something else that's causing him to not be focused at the free throw line? But the fact that he's shooting 70.6%, that's not okay.
Yeah, it's like so low.
Like, it's so incredibly low. I mean, it's almost, I'll almost give Domantas Sabonis a free pass for shooting in the 60s because he's a center. Like, that's what he's not a natural 3-point shooter, although he's shooting great this year.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but the fact is he's not a shooter. He's a guy who bullies his way to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm okay with him not being a great free throw shooter. But for Fox last year to shoot 78% and this year to be shooting 70.6, like, it really is crazy how much he's leaving on the table.
I did not realize this just through time. Sabonis last year, 74.2% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. I will take that from your starting center for sure. Kevin Huerter shot it at 72.5% from the free throw line last year.
He was bad. And not what? Only that, but like even in crunch time, he was worse.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Shoot 40% from three and 72.5% from the free throw line?
You know what? I told you though, like
that's so weird.
When guys miss their free throws, it's a symptom. It's a symptom of something bigger that's going on. And I'll tell you, when Kevin Huerter's flying high and hitting all of his threes, he doesn't miss a single free throw. The second that things start to go wrong, like a switch goes off in some of these guys and they start missing them. I mean, was it the Bucks game where the two games in a row that they lost early in the season where they lost specifically because of free throws?
Yeah.
Malik missed, was it De'Aaron missed two and then Malik missed one and they end up giving a game winner up at the
final I think Fox missed two and then Malik missed one.
It was Milwaukee, right?
Damian Lillard hit a three. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
They've had so many games. That's the problem, is they've had so many games where this is a problem. And the fact that we're sitting here on February 21st doing a second half look ahead, and one of the things they can improve is like, yeah, hey, make your free. They have three players who play minutes, like substantial minutes. Jordan Ford has hit all of his free throws this year, but he's played 18 minutes or whatever it is. They have three players shooting better than 80% from the line.
Yeah.
And 82% leads the team. Well, that's Harrison Barnes.
And Harrison...
And he shoots two a game.
But that's not who Harrison has been. And again, if Harrison can hit free throws like that, I mean, this is a guy who averaged 5 free throw attempts per game last year and 5.4 the year before. He's not part of the overall offensive scheme on a nightly basis. And so that's part of the problem. Like, but Kyle, it's not... That's where I keep pointing out. It's not just about this year. Like when you're trying to build a franchise to move, like to have a sustained culture and sustained winning culture that gets you to the playoffs, you know, 6-8 times in a row, you have to bring along young players in that system, and especially star level young players, number 4 pick in the draft, star players. And so for me, a lot of what happened in the first half is part of this switch where Keegan Murray's been given a much longer, you know, run. He's been given a lot more opportunities. Now, we've seen that sort of fall apart here in the last month, especially as Harrison Barnes has stepped forward.
Those two can't coexist, apparently.
No.
Offensively.
Well, and it's funny because you hear, which is something that I've been saying forever, like, this team doesn't need more scorers. This team needs more like 3-and-D specialty players, and that's going to be the focus moving forward. It sounds like from the Kings that they're going to start looking for that type of player.
Yes,
but Kyle, it's who they should have been looking for this whole time.
I totally agree.
Yeah,
could not agree more.
So, and I'd always caution people, like, the teams that you remember, the great teams from 1998 until 2006 of the Kings, like. It started the first year was Tariq Abdul-Wahed was the starting shooting guard, and then Nick Anderson, and then finally Doug Christie, and Jason Williams was the starting point guard, and then eventually it became Mike Bibby. And, you know, so your team morphs over a group of years, but that's where, like, the running back mentality, like, you can't keep that mentality all the time, because when your team has holes, you have to figure out a way to fix that and to create a more balanced team. And I would caution people, like, a lot of people are like, well, they can't do anything. What were they supposed to do? They're supposed to figure it out. Like, again,
right.
Like, again, like, Jerry Reynolds is, like, so brilliant with it's so basic and brilliant at the same time. If you have a 5-year plan in the NBA, you have no plan at all.
Yeah.
You won't last 5 years to go see your plan through. If you have a 3-year plan, you're probably not going to last to see that plan through. You need to be able to adapt and move forward. And when things aren't working, make adjustments. When a coach needs something different, make adjustments. And this is a never-ending process.
I think one of the problems with the run it back idea is, in theory, sure, it works. In theory, but then there's the human element of this.
Yeah.
Where you can't just say, okay, same players for the most part. I will throw a Chris Duarte in here. We'll throw a JaVale McGee in there. But for the most part, it's going to be the same rotation. Everybody, go do what you did last year, except Keegan do it more and Harrison do it less. And also, Kevin, your starting job might be up for grabs, but also it might not. Like, there needs to be a defined role for everybody moving forward instead of just, we're going to run this back and then tweak it as we go, because that's not how people work. Like, that's not, I can't fathom that Harrison Barnes, who is ultimate team guy, right?
Yep.
Everybody loves Harrison Barnes. Everybody wants a Harrison Barnes in their locker room, no doubt. But he was a pretty substantial piece offensively last year. And then they go, yeah, we're going to run it back. But hey, Harrison, go stand in the corner.
I think it's a natural progression of players, right? When a guy hits 31 going on 32, he's going to have to take a lesser role on most teams. Now, mm-hmm. if he's a superstar, then no. But most role players, which Harrison Barnes is a role player, they have to understand that that's part of the process. And not only that, but the Kings paid him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they gave him $17 million this year, $18 million next year, and $19 million the year after that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a substantial amount of money to be a role player and to understand your role and to fit into a role and to move forward. Now, again, I will make the argument that I think Harrison, like, inadvertently took it too far. Like, I don't think he intended to average, you know, to have those games where he goes 0 for 2 from the field and score zero. I don't think that that's what he intended. But I think when you're trying to be a good teammate and you're trying to fit in, you're trying to, you know, move this thing forward, sometimes you get lost. And you don't, even if there is noise on the outside, if you're not a guy who listens to the noise, you don't understand, right? You know, the Kings had a coach that liked to say all the time, hey, I'm going to go watch the film and I'll get back to you on that. It became a meme online. He didn't know it was a meme. He didn't know that there was this thing out there that was like people were drinking every time Luke Walton said, you know, I've got to go watch the film.
Oof.
So
Mike Singletary had the same thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Turns out if your coach needs to watch the film to evaluate what's going on, that's not a good spot to be in.
Well, that's because fans just like,
that's why that,
they
dude,
pick up on these things.
That's why I rock with Mike Brown so much, because he will sit down and I go back to the presser from after the Pistons game where he got asked about the 3-point defense. I can't remember if it was you or Brendan or whoever asked. And he didn't go, I got to go look at the tape and see what happened there. He's like, no, here's exactly what happened. X, Y, and Z. And we didn't do this. We didn't do that. We didn't do this. He did it after the Pacers game as well with TJ McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, here's what we needed to do. Here's what we did. And that ability to see that as a coach, I think, is valuable. But that's a sidebar.
Yeah, I mean, so. I've had coaches here in Sacramento that, like, you could see that they had an epiphany of what was happening, what was going wrong. And they would come to us, I figured it out. Like, this is what's going on. But they didn't have a solution.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger problem. And you're like, okay, I'm not sure that you really wanted to, like, tell us that you found the problem, but, you know.
You don't know how to fix it.
Yeah. But it's incurable. It's incurable. Like, it's a terminal problem. That's a problem. And so I definitely think that, like, these are all complex things. And some coaches, just their thought process is to tell you what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any problems with a coach saying, hey, I need to look at the film before I sit here and flay my dudes.
Yeah.
If he's always just looking at the film and then not being able to answer the question,
sure.
I think that's the problem. It becomes an avoidance thing where it's almost like, well, I'm not going to tell you what's going wrong. I'm just going to go look at the tape. Mm-hmm. And you guys aren't going to figure out what's going wrong because I'm not going to tell you, right? And then you have other coaches who are like Mike will, like, multiple times this year and last year, like, he'll start getting physical with media members showing us how he expects plays to happen, whether it's him throwing around Jason Anderson or like, putting an arm into a forearm into Deuce Mason's chest and, like, pushing him. Or, like, what he did his first year.
To be clear, in case somebody was half listening, doing this to demonstrate.
Oh yeah, demonstrate.
Not because he didn't like something dude said, so he put gave him a forearm shiver.
Yeah, no.
Sorry,
he's,
keep going.
He's not abusive to the media, but what he does do is he, like, when he's talking about, hey, like, our 3-point defense is to fly up and hit somebody's hip, and not give them 2 feet of space to actually be in physical contact. He actually shows us what he's talking about. He'll grab one of the media members and he'll, like, show you specifically. And it's a good way to conduct business if you're a head coach, because what he's doing is he's giving us, like, more context and showing the physicality that he expects from his players. So when we go out and we watch a game and then all of a sudden we see guys starting to hit 3-pointers, and then you start watching the players that are defending those 3-point shots, and you start seeing time and time again that they're not doing what Mike Brown is saying. Mm-hmm. And then when Mike goes into the press conference afterwards and says, hey, look, I would like to tell you that I need to switch my scheme, that it's a schematic thing.
Right.
But before I switch my scheme, the players have to do what I'm asking them to do.
Yeah.
And so as media members, we now have been taught what the players are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we can watch what the players are doing or what they're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not doing what he's asking, then it's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether the coach needs to find a new way to get through to his players or not becomes a secondary issue.
And that's the question I have with this whole Kings 3-point defense thing.
Yeah.
Is, I get that Mike Brown says, well, we're not changing the scheme, we're not changing what we are defensively, foundationally, until I see that it doesn't work. And that makes sense. And I think that's probably better in the long run.
Yes.
And I know he can't just come out and say this, but at some point, it's like you have to look at your roster then and figure out, because look, I am not a professional basketball player, FYI. Breaking news.
Yep.
I watched him in a press conference and went, oh, I understand. I get that. I get what's happening there. And the fact that that's not translating on the court, I can't imagine that it's a Mike Brown problem and how he's getting the message across. Because, hey, when Alec Burks is 4-for-5 from three and he has it above the break and you close out, don't stop 6 feet short.
Yeah.
Like that should just be very easy, right? But at some point, I would love, and again, you're not going to get a direct answer, but is it a personnel problem now? Is it a coaching problem? Like, is it being coached improperly? I can't fathom that it is, but he can't just come out and say, like, yeah, we don't have the dudes for it. But that's just kind of what all of this keeps coming back to me.
Well, I think partially it is that, right? But I would just say, like, let's just compare Alex Len to JaVale McGee, right?
Great. My favorite thing.
Well, I mean, like, in basic terms, like, the superior athlete is JaVale McGee, right?
Correct.
Without any question.
Not even close.
Like,
JaVale is one of the best athletes ever in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, the dude can fly. He's got a crazy wingspan, all this stuff, right? And then you look at Alex Len, who is more of a positional, tall, big man.
Mm-hmm.
He can't catch the lob. But we start to trust more and more of the guy who doesn't jump off the page, who doesn't, like, scream, oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened, both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
You start to lean more towards the guy who's just solid, right?
And right.
My point is that, like, players aren't created equal. We have two guys who are 7'1", two guys with massive wingspans, two guys are gigantic human beings. They play the game so differently.
Right.
And, like, whether, you know, one plays with instinct more and one plays with, like, basketball IQ more, I think you can see that, right?
Sure.
And then that's a problem, because when you're looking around at all your players, it doesn't matter how many 6'6", 6'7" guys you have, they're not created equally. One guy shoots the ball better, one guy rebounds better, one guy has a higher basketball IQ, one guy has a better defensive acumen. You got, you know, you can have a short guy with long arms, you can have a tall guy with short arms.
Sure.
And there's all of these things that you have to deal with as a coach, the limitations of the players that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that might get overlooked, especially on the offensive end, sometimes it can be hidden, but basketball IQ is something that you cannot hide on the defensive end.
Oh, no doubt.
And that, at the end of the day, I think is part of the Kings' problem, is that their offensive basketball IQ is off the charts. Their defensive basketball IQ, not so much.
Yeah.
And that's something that you have to work on, but it's also at some point, Kyle, you don't got it. I gotta go
somewhere
else.
You either have it or you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna be fascinating to see how they navigate that over this. I mean, next off season.
Yeah.
We've been talking about over the next 2 or 3 years. It's like, nah, man, this is coming up. This is right now.
It's now.
Yes.
It's now. Yeah. You need Doug Christie on this team. You do. Like, whether it's at the...
Well, he's on the bench.
Well, yeah, but whether it's at the three, whether it's at the two, whether it's at the four, I don't care where what position.
Yeah.
You have to find that player this offseason right now.
I really thought it was Chris Duarte. I was really big on the Chris Duarte signing. Hasn't worked out.
Yeah.
Hasn't worked out. Anyways, somebody in the chat, real quick, just to catch everybody up, Chris Scott in the chatty house asked if Sasha was practicing at all yesterday. He is not.
No, Sasha's out long term. Yeah, Sasha. I don't think Sasha. Like, he might play again this season, but I'm leaning more towards there's a good chance he won't, because by the time he gets back, he will have missed so much time leading into the postseason if the Kings are that team. And like, this is a month's injury. It's not a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I have a baseball thing I want to get to, and can the Kings get their swagger back? We'll talk about that next on ESPN 1320.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.